You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and it's another cool episode. We are here with Josh of Raging Nathans, and it's going to be the spring of the Nathans, I got to say. They got a new record coming out that I think is getting announced tomorrow, so by the time you hear this, it will be announced. And that's going to be cool, and it's called Room for One More. It's out via Rad Girlfriend Records, and Raging Nathans are about to embark on a really cool mini tour, or we'll say standard tour, at the end of this month. Starting March 28th and running through April 3, it's going to be Raging Nathans, HR, Hunting Rod, Human Rights of the Bad Brains, and the Dead Kennedys. So that's going to be a really cool tour. Starts in Boston, goes to New York, Allentown, Philly, and Washington, D.C., ending up in D.C. where HR hails from. So that's quite fitting. Let's kick it off with a tune. Josh, what song should we kick this episode off with?
I would love to play the new Raging Nathans song that comes out tomorrow called The Grudge.
And that was The Grudge by Raging Nathans off the new album, Room for One More. And that's going to be real exciting. So, Josh, you know, we had you on not that long ago, so exciting to have you back on. I'm surprised Raging Nathans already have a new record coming out. You guys are super prolific. What's driving what's the verb transitive for prolific? Prolificity, whatever it is. What's driving the outburst of a ton of energy right now?
You know, It started with COVID, I think. We always wanted to like make sure that we were putting out new music and new material, just because I feel like, especially in the state of things. Okay, sorry. Hey, have a great thing. Give me a kiss. All right, bye. I'll be right here. All right. Sorry, dude.
That's dude, Josh dropping off his kid. And actually, I'm going to let you answer that. We're going to talk about that. Josh is a pretty impressive guy in that he's a dad. He runs a business. I don't know if you disclose what kind of business you run or not. And he's in a band. And he runs a record label. And he's in another band. So pretty wild, man. Pretty wild. So go ahead, Josh. We'll talk about all that.
Yes, please. So I'm just parking right now. I think that we've always had this like kind of urge and need to like want to put out new music consistently, because I feel like in the state of the way things are right now, it's like, you know, you got to stay fresh. And I think that like it's not like where it was, where you used to be able to like put out an album every 2 years and then like, you know, tour on it. It's like things are a little different. And also, we never really fit in with that, because we're just always writing, you know, and playing the same stuff gets boring for us. And we're always trying to push ourselves to just write something that was better than the last time. So it started with COVID, and where we were writing songs for, you know, we did Oppositional Defiance, which came out in 2020. And then we did Waste My Heart, which was 2021. And then we actually had all the songs written and recorded for Still Spitting Blood, which started to come out in 2022, but it didn't officially come out till the following year, because like, I was like, maybe the world,
you know, I kind of felt like when Still Spitting Blood was like recorded and everything, I was like, I'm not really sure if the world, you know, needs a third Raging Athens record in just as many years, you know? And then what had happened was, as soon as I kind of like made that decision, there was a vinyl shutdown where, you know, I got a phone call that was like, it said, everything I have at the plant is going to take like a year to finish. And there's nothing I can do about it, and it sucks. So, like, our record got caught, the Still Spitting Blood record got caught in that. And so what I had done was, like, to buy time, I had released every single song on the record as a single, but, like, 2 or 3 weeks apart. So that bought me, like, you know, 20 months or something. And then by that time, everybody had their orders in, and the record started coming out. But the Room for One More record, last year was interesting for us because we were very busy. We toured a lot, and we toured a lot with cool bands, and so like we didn't have as much time to write as we had previously, but like we were still like when we were at home, we were still writing songs. And so we got this together, and we had everything. We went on tour with Less Than Jake last year in April, and when we got home, we went to Matt Yonker's house in Nashville in June and July and finish this new record. And so it's just coming out now. So almost like, you know, 8 or 9 months later, but like, dude, we've already been back in the studio. Like we've got a bunch of new songs and stuff that we're trying to figure out what to do with. And dude, it's like a shark, you know, it's like, you just got to keep moving. I think that's how we look at it.
Well, what's interesting is Raging Athens have been very prolific, much like a guest star on the record. This is pretty cool. Robert Pollard's on the record. I know he did a cover for a Raging Nathan's Mikey Yerk band split 7-inch, but you've got Robert Pollard actually on the record. Was that like an awkward approach, or how'd that come about? And I interviewed Robert Pollard once, and he was surprisingly very normal to me. I thought he was going to be some freaky guy. He was just like a normal guy, very talented and very prolific and very artistic. But like I was kind of expecting maybe like a Nick Blinko or a Lee Scratch Perry type character. And to me, he was just like a normal guy. So how did that ask come about, and what was the reaction like? And what's it like having Robert on your record?
Cool. Man, you know, like, and I probably, you know, he asked to be credited as on the record, he's credited as somebody else, as like a fake name or whatever. But like, yeah, I asked him because, yes, he did the cover for the Mikey Erg split, and he's just a friend of mine, man, you know, and also somebody that I respect very much in terms of like his output and his prolificness, just his general like how he treats rock and roll. And you know, I don't think Guided by Voices are going to be playing live anymore, and I was at the last show in Dayton, and he invited me and my wife, and we were hanging out with him. And I mean, and it was just like, you know, there's all these people there, and he's just hanging out with me, you know, and he's, so I actually had like a little bit of a dilemma in asking, like, I wanted to ask him, I thought that it would be, that his voice would work really well on the song. And, but like, you know how it is, man, like that guy, he could do anything he wants. He certainly doesn't have to sing backups on a Raging Nathan's record. And so I felt like I was going to ask him, but I didn't. I was worried because, like, I didn't want him to say yes because he felt like he needed to because we were friends or something, or you know what I mean? And I also didn't want him to say no. So, like, yeah, man, it was a weird thing. But, you know, I asked him and he was just like, yeah, no problem. And he put me in touch with the guy who he records with, and we made it happen. And, you know, like I said, like, I don't want that to be a selling point for the record, because it's like, I certainly don't want to use Bob as like, as a vehicle to sell my record. That's not that. It's like, I just did it because, you know, what I was thinking about was like, you know, I'm a huge Bad Religion fan. And I always like remembered when I found out that like Eddie Vedder did vocals on Stranger Than Fiction, you know, and it's like,
okay, yeah.
And like, you know, I'm not sure if he's credited in the record for it or not, but like, you know, it's pretty well known that he did that. And I just always think that's cool, you know, and the fact that like he lent his voice to our record, it was a very personal thing, and it made me very happy. And I just saw him the other day, and he's like, "Where's my test pressing?" And he's a record collector, man. He's a musician. He's an artist, and he's somebody who I respect highly, him and his wife. And yeah, I'm fortunate that he said yes.
Well, that's pretty cool. Who is Robert, like one of like the big Getchies for a record, or who else do you think you might like to have on a Raging Nathan's record in the future?
Me personally, like if I could ask people who like to be on a record.
Yeah, I'll say, who could you conceivably get, and who could you be your dream person? And you could say, like, Jimi Hendrix or something. So who could you conceivably get, and who you know, in the clouds?
Well, first of all, I would love to see, and he would probably, like, hate hearing this, but, like, I would love to ask Blag to do, like, an intro to a record. Like, mm-hmm. Have you ever, like, you know, on that Offspring record, Americana, where, like, or not Americana, Ixnay on the Hombre, where Jello does he does the whole like opening intro track.
Yeah.
You know, like I always like thought that would be cool to have like Blag do like an intro to a record or like some kind of skit or something. You know, I would love to have, I don't know, man. Like there's a ton of people. Like it's mainly like the Dwarves. Like that's who I want. like I want like Nick. I want Nick to play, you know, like bass on my record, or like a solo, or like Mark to play a guitar solo or something. Any, you know, for me it's more like I would be honored to have people that I look up to and like consider myself friends with, like agree to do something on my record, because to me that it's like these are people that I feel like don't have to they don't have to say yes to anything, and they don't have to be nice to you. I mean, you know, they could be your friend, but they can still say, hey man, this record sucks, you know, I'm not gonna like,
yeah.
And so that's where I start thinking about now is like, you know, I would love to have people that I've gone on tour with play, you know, just be guest musicians on my record.
A question I had about the records, if we look at a lot of the titles and the lyrics on the record, The Grudge, Misery and Company, If I Want You to Hate Me, Threats and Promises, are you doing all right, man? Are you bumming out? You know, what's up with the persistent negativity on this record? Because I should mention the record is real cool. It's Raging Nathan's doing what they do, you know, kind of melodic, high-energy punk rock. I think it's one of their tightest written records. It's 12 tracks and it blazes by. And a lot of the tracks are actually pretty short, like 2 minutes and 20 seconds, 2 minutes and 10 seconds, 1 minute and 20 seconds, 2 minutes. So it rips by. It's a really well-written, tightly written record. Well, I'm wondering, though, are you bumming out? What's up with that?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a angry, negative guy. I mean, I don't know. Not really. It's like I just write about – I find it easier to write about things that – bother me or things that anger me or whatever rather than like things that make me happy. Like I don't think I've ever written a song that about like anything like happy, you know. And it's just like I don't know how to do that. I literally only know how to do one thing, and it's like the things in my life that are great and make me happy, I don't feel the need to like write about because they're already gratifying enough. Like the things that I choose to write about are the things that I need to get off my chest and, or things that I feel like I can't speak to anybody else about, you know? And, also it's not just me. Like I write Nick, the guitar player writes songs. The bass player, Christian, he'll throw a song in there. You know what I mean? And so, it's kind of a combination of everybody. It just kind of still happens that all of us are. And when I say like angry, sure, I'm an angry guy. I'm not really like a half glass full guy. You know, I people irritate me, man. And it's like, I don't know why. Like I try to go, it's like, I watch Larry David sometimes, you know, like the Curb Your Enthusiasm show. And sometimes like, you know, sometimes it's him, right? Like every other episode, like he's the asshole, but like every other episode, it's the other people that are unreasonable. And I constantly find myself around what I find to be unreasonable people or like, you know, or people that aren't living up to like just basic being fucking a human being. And so I write about that and that's kind of how I go through life. And writing about it makes me a little less grumpy, you know?
Let's talk about that. Cause I sort of share a similar mindset. I'm going to give you an example. When I saw Ween about 4 years ago, I mean, I love Ween. I'm a huge Ween fan, but Ween fans as a whole are just obnoxious. And standing next to me, there was this guy that he was like singing every song along with the entire song. And in between, he was like licking the air. And I thought he was special needs. I'm not making fun. Like, I thought he was special needs. I'm like, oh, this guy's like special needs. And then after the show was over, he just starts talking to his friend Norman. I'm like, oh, he's not special needs. He's just kind of a jackass. You know what I mean? And so like, he's not doing anything other than enjoying the Ween concert that he paid for. But I hated the guy. And honestly, it affected my enjoyment of the concert. You know, another example, I saw Ringo at Punk Rock Boy just before Punk Rock Boy last summer in Vegas. And Ringo was awesome. But next to me were these two guys before the show. And they were like trying to out trivia each other about Ringo. Like they didn't know each other. They just started talking about Ringo. And it was like the worst trivia I'd ever heard. It was like, what font is used on the back of the credits for Sergeant Pepper? It's like, right. Who gives a shit, man? Who cares? You know what I mean? And they're going on and on and on about this painful trivia. And I'm like, oh, I wanted to strangle them both. What's up with that? Do you have those kind of interactions, or is your annoyance with the human race different?
You know, mine is like, I get into it a lot with like, businesses and like people that are like at, you know, like, airlines or like car people or just like somebody that won't. So I'll give you an example. The other day, I had to call the bank about a credit issue for one of my stores. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm asking this guy a specific question and he can't answer it. Right. And it's not that like, I'm not okay. So he can't answer the question in terms of like an answer that answers my question. He says, well, you know, you just have to do this. And I said, okay, I understand that, but why do I have to do that? And he just can't go any further. And he just keeps repeating the same thing to me. And so finally, like, I'm like, look, man, I can understand you're probably frustrated that, like, because I'm very professional. You know what I mean? I don't raise my voice usually when I'm talking to these people. I don't curse, because once you do that, it's like you're the unreasonable one. And so, like, I'm talking to this guy normally, and I said, well, look, dude, I'm just like, I understand you're probably frustrated because I'm asking you the same thing, but like you're not understanding my question. And he's like, I've already explained this to you. And at that point, I'm like, no, no, no. I'm like, now you're escalating the conversation, because, like, I don't care if you got to sit here for the next 45 minutes and explain it to me. Like, I am a member of this bank, and I'm asking you a question. And then he goes, well, I don't have time to sit here and talk about X amount of dollars. And I'm like, at that point, I'm like, well, let me talk to your boss, you know? And so, like, you know, then he starts apologizing because he knows that he's, so this is like my problem with people is that I don't let stuff slide. Like, if somebody's doing a shitty job or if somebody's like being rude to me, like I talk about it, you know, like I don't just, I cannot just let it go, because like, I feel like I have to hold myself to a certain standard of living as a normal person, like running businesses, dealing with customers, running this record label. I got a family. It's like, yo, I have to function in a normal capacity. And I kind of expect everybody else to, too, because it's like, I also am like very forgiving and like patient, because I understand, like, yo, I have a bad day all the time. And I understand that in people. And I understand if you're having a bad day, but like, there reaches a point once you push me to that point of like, you're being a moronic asshole. And now I have to like deal with it. And so I just, some days I have great interactions with great people, and everything is like, wow, man, that guy was so helpful. You know, everything is easy. And then some days it's just person after person of like, you know, insufferable, you know, lack of whatever, just an ability to be a normal human being that can communicate effectively.
Well, there you go. We've got the inside view of Josh's perspective and what fuels the new
Maybe Reggie I'm Nathan's having record. A bad day. I don't know.
No, I try to be a pretty relaxed, pretty reasonable guy, but it does seem that people are getting more crass and more selfish and more just blockheaded. You know, like in my day,
also entitled. I feel like there's a huge sense of entitlement, like in a lot of the people that I deal with, and maybe it's like who I'm surrounding myself with in terms of like customers at my store, or like, you know, or like my kids or like whatever. But you know, I really try to be conscious in my life and my actions of how I act towards other people, because you know, every time I meet somebody who's like, who I just can't stand how they're acting, I tell myself like, okay, this isn't exactly how I don't want to act. So don't be like this person. You know what I mean? I try to model myself over people. You know, when I see somebody deal with a problem or a situation, like Patrick in my band, like our drummer, you know, certain things he deals with, he can deal with very well. And sometimes it makes me like, you know, take a breather for a second and like step back and be like, okay, you know, maybe I'm flying off the handle a bit too much, or like, you know, whatever. There's options in how you can live your life. And I'm trying to like, trying to be better about, you know, not being so angry about people being stupid.
You mentioned some of these things that, you know, you're a family guy, you know, you run a business, you run a record label, you're in a band. And those things all seem to be very, you not sleep, like how do you do so much, I guess, in a month? Because it's pretty crazy.
I just make it part of my daily routine. You know, like I enjoy putting out records. So like I've been putting out records for 14 years. So that's just something that like, you know, now that's embedded in an everyday thing that I do. Right. So like I get up, I answer emails, or I pack up orders, or I fucking neglect it for a few days. It's all the same. It all, you know, and then that's the record label aspect. The Raging Nathans and the Dopamines. I mean, there was a time where I was playing in like those bands. I was playing in the Slow Death. I was playing in the Queers. I was playing in 16 other bands, like, you know, and that puts a strain. It put a strain on my life. It put a strain on my family. But like, you know, I looked at it like I'm putting in work. I've gained opportunities. I've met a lot of interesting people. I've got to, and because of that, I've gotten to put out cool records. So like, you know, with the bands, it's just a daily, I compartmentalize every aspect of the things that I do, my businesses, my record label, my bands. I just deal with it accordingly. Like my wife says, I'm always on my phone, you know, and I hate that because she's right. And it's because she's like, who are you talking to? I'm like, well, I got 16 people that I'm replying to all, you know, all at once, or doing a podcast, or like whatever. And so it gets frustrating, but that's just my personality. I feel like if I'm not, when I have days, like, you know, let's say I slept until noon and didn't have much to do that day, and, you know, watch TV all day, and then all of a sudden it's evening time and I didn't do anything, and smoked weed or like whatever. Like, I don't find that to be gratifying. Like, I'm not, like, I feel like I'm wasting time. I also feel like I wasted a lot of time in my youth, and I'm it really bums me out. My beard's starting to get gray. Like, I'm getting older. I feel like time is short, and I'm trying to cram as much as I can into it. And at least I'm doing things that I like, you know, the businesses that I run, I'd rather be doing than working for somebody else, putting out records, you know, playing in bands. These are things that I enjoy doing most of the time. So yeah, that's how I do it, man. I just make sure that I try to be as present as I can for my family. I take my son to his swimming lessons and his after school stuff, and I take him to school in the morning, and I just, you know, try to get as much done during the day as possible.
And along those lines, you guys are going on tour with HR and the Dead Kennedys. HR, as legendary as it gets, also a guy fraught with some issues, you know. Dead Kennedys, a volatile band, you know, a lot of members or former members, you know, don't get along. And a lot of the current members of Dead Kennedys, kind of unique, odd people. Do you have any trepidation about this tour? Do you think this tour is going to be no problems? How do you see the tour unfolding? And have you chosen to specifically interact with legends or leave them at an arm's distance?
Oh man, I couldn't be happier. You know, I'm thrilled. Let's put it this way. Dead Kennedys, we'll start with them. Dead Kennedys are one of my favorite bands of all time. You know, so was there a point in my life where I was like, oh yeah, I wonder what the Dead Kennedys are like without Jello? Like, sure. I think everybody has. But like, also, I'm not opposed to, like, you know, a band continuing, you know. It's not one person. It's a group of people. You know, East Bay Ray and Klaus Fluoride are as legendary figures to me as anybody else. And so, like, you know, getting an opportunity, you know, I busted my ass my whole, since I was a teenager, playing music, touring, trying to make good music, put out records, you know. I never thought I'd get an opportunity like this. And when it arises, or when it happens, you know, I'm quick to jump on it and be grateful for it, because, like, you know, this is what I want to do. These are the people I want to be around. These are the people I want to talk to. I want to be peers, musically, with, you know, with the Dead Kennedys. I want to be musical peers with HR. Like their personalities and their and who they are as people, to me, are two different things. You know, it's like, yes, they are their individual, you know, entities, but also, like, as musicians, and like, I'm more concerned with, like, being respected as a guy who writes songs, you know, as a musician, you know, and less about, like, I don't know, like, yeah, I do. I want to talk to them, you know, like, that's my role in the band, is, like, I'm the guy who kind of goes and hangs out. Like, you know, we did a tour with HR, and I tried to interact with him as much as I could. Let's, you know, maybe this time will be a little different. We didn't speak much, you know, we took a couple pictures together. I exchanged a few words with him. But his band, I got along with very, very well. And I'm hoping it's the same with the Dead Kennedys. You know, it's like, hey, I'm just grateful to be there, man. That the bottom line, I am just grateful to be there. You know, we talked about this last time, playing shows with guys like the Dwarves. You know, it's great. These are cool guys. These are cool guys that have been friends to my band. You know, when they could be friends, and they don't have to be. The Queers are the same thing. You know, Joe has opened up a lot of doors for me. I running the record label, meeting these guys, meeting people, you know, putting out bands that I grew up listening to, stuff like that. It's been such a positive experience for me because, you know, 99% of the time, these guys are cool dudes, you know, and they're interesting. It's what I live for, dude. I want to know about the wild stories or like the boring stories or just like who you are as a person versus who your persona is on stage. Like that stuff is fascinating to me. And yeah, so that's how I feel about that. I'm grateful to be on this tour. I have nothing but, you know, excitement in my heart about this tour and the opportunity to play in front of new people that they're giving me. You know, it's a gift. The Dead Kennedys, HR, they're giving the Raging Nathans and myself a gift. You know, the universe is giving me a gift by allowing my band to play for new people. And also it's also a little bit validating in terms of the amount of work that I feel like the band has done. You know, I want to feel like we've earned it.
Well said. And then what I will say is I know someone that saw HR maybe about a month ago and they said he was really good. Seems he's in a really good space. So that's, you know, I definitely think, you know, it's worth checking out HR and of course the Raging Nathans for sure. And actually I'm going to circle back to another. Oh, go ahead.
Hey John, real quick. You know, it's, I was joking a little bit earlier about like how negative I am and stuff like that. Like I'm sure I'm a pessimist. Right. But here's the thing. When I announced the Dead Kennedys tour, you know, it wasn't like 5 minutes before people were like saying really nasty stuff on the internet and in
my internet.
Yeah. But like what I'm thinking to myself is like, you know, they say all sorts of terrible shit about HR. You know, every time I like his band, they were great. It's not like there was nothing bad about it. You know what I mean? And yeah. And the same with the Dead Kennedys. It's like I've seen. So it's very easy to be negative. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what has this guy been saying the last 30 years? Does this guy get on fucking, you know, a message board every day since, you know, 1995 talking about how, like, you know, oh, no Jello, no DKs. It's like it's easy to be negative, but it's even easier to have a good time. And I'm all about having a good time. And that's, you know, that's important to me. It's like I'm going to have a good time. And I'm going to be grateful to be there.
Well, there's a quote. It's easy to be negative, but it's even easier to have a great time. And there you go. So so this tour is particularly interesting because it's a punk band, a reggae band with a punk background, of course, and then a punk legend. What's your strategy going to be there? Are you going to walk up there as a peer and say, we're here to whip ass? Are you going to walk up there and say, hey, thanks for coming out early. We appreciate it. What's your mental mindset? What's your game plan for the tour?
Yeah, man, I'm just going to go and I'm going to do exactly what we came to do. You know, we're going to play our set and we're going to play it just like, we're not going to pull any punches. You know, we're just going to be ourselves. And I hope, because being ourselves is what got us there. And hopefully being ourselves is what gets us, you know, through these shows and on to the next thing, you know?
And also circling back is you talked about how you like to talk with the guys. Something that I always kind of juggle with and have somewhat difficulty with. I was at a show and one of the original Buzzcocks was there. I'm going to look up his name real quick. He's like the least famous member of the Buzzcocks, but he's like an original, you know, UK guy. And he was there. Someone said, oh, you know, that guy was in the Buzzcocks. He's like an original Buzzcock. I'm like, oh, that's cool, man. And I was talking to him, but I didn't really ask him about the Buzzcocks because I didn't want to punish him. You know what I mean? And then afterwards, he was like, John, why do you ask him about the Buzzcocks? I'm like he loves talking about the Buzzcocks, you know? I'm like, oh. Yeah. I think it was Garth Smith. That's who it was. Yeah. So how do you juggle that?
Well, you know, dude, I'm a fan. First and foremost, I am a fan, and I struggle with that because
no,
like,
I'm sorry, it was Steve Garvey. I apologize. It was Steve Garvey of the Buzzcocks. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I struggle with it, dude, because you know, I'm at a point in our career where like we are being treated as peers to other musicians, but like that sense in me of like of wanting to be a fan of somebody else's music and to like talk to them and ask them questions and like, you know, yeah, people call that punishing, and like I really dislike that term because sure, there are punishers like big time, you know, like there are guys that are like, yeah, I don't want to know your life story in the first 5 minutes that I meet you, like who does? But like I also have a bit of tolerance for people like that because I think to myself, well, who do you think's buying your records? You know, like who do you think is buying your records and coming to your shows? It's these guys that, okay, maybe they're a little awkward. Maybe they don't know how to interact with people. Maybe they're a little starstruck, whatever it is. You know what I mean? And I think that everyone needs to be respected a little bit more. I don't use the word punisher. I don't use it because I don't like it. Because maybe I am one. I don't know. I think maybe it hits me a little deep. Like I try to frame things in a way where I'm not bothering anybody or I'm not like, you know, I'm not like interfering with the job that they're doing. You know, it's like, but I've also had a lot of experience being around musicians that I like. So, you know, I just look, I'm going to bring my Dead Kennedys records on tour and I'm gonna ask if Bay Ray to sign them and hopefully he does, and if he doesn't, you know, I'll be weirded out. I think I might have told you the story, like I took a Guns and Wankers record all the way to England one time because we were playing with Guns and Wankers at some festival, and like, you know, we were literally playing with them. I could have like been, I was backstage with Duncan and I could have just been like talking and hanging out, but like of course there I was with like a Sharpie and a fucking record, and this guy's like sweating his ass off because he just got off stage, and I'm like, oh, will you like sign my record, you know? And he's like, it was weird. I mean yeah. I was weird, you know, but like I wanted him to sign the fucking record. So you know, I struggle with it because I'm a fan first and foremost, and I feel like if I ever lose that sense of like, you know, of wonder about another band, or like then like I'm not here to be a cool guy, man. You know, I don't want to be the cool guy. I want to watch my favorite bands, and I want to be friends with them, and I also want to respect that. I want them to know that I respect them as musicians, and if by asking them for an autograph, you know, that's how I do it, you know.
If Greg Ginn called up and said, Josh, I want you to join Black Flag, would you join?
Yeah, of course.
he says you can have bass or vocals. Which would you take?
Oh, vocals, man.
Interesting.
I'm going for vocals.
I think that's the correct choice between those two. Yeah, I think that is, because in Black Flag there's been five vocalists now, and there's actually been like four or five bassists. But Dukowski, man, it's hard to go up against that. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you though, it's like I saw them recently. And, you know, and it wasn't, you know, they get a bad rap. People say a lot of, again, a lot of nasty shit about the new Black Flag. It was a little bit slower. So the problem with being the vocalist is like, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking of like, you know, how much life I would bring to it. Right. Like how much, you know, vitality I would reinvigorate Black Flag. But like, you know, you can only do so much if Greg Ginn is playing it, you know, very slow, there's only so much you can do, you know. But yeah, in my mind, I'd fucking kill it.
Well said. Just a few more questions. What do you want the listener to take from the new record or perceive from the new record, or how do you want the new record to make the listener feel?
I want them to my biggest goal is I want somebody to relate to how I'm feeling. And in doing so, I feel like when people relate to lyrics, I feel like it helps them, you know, like they can really vibe with the thing that you're saying, or they really just connect to something, an emotion. And that's that would be my ultimate goal, is like all of these negative things that I'm trying to get out of my body, that I'm trying to get out of my head, you know, that I'm trying to get out of my heart, my chest, like all those, that anxiousness, the anger, the frustration, you know, all of those things. I'm hoping that there's somebody out there who's going through something that feels like how I feel, that listens to that and they go, man, this guy is talking to me. You know, this guy is articulating what I wish that I could say. I would love to be that voice for somebody, to for them to feel, you know, make them feel that way. That's my, that would be my all time like accomplishment with a record like this.
Well, well said. The new record by Reggie Nathans, Room for One More, out via Rad Girlfriend Records, out, I think it's May 2 it's out, correct?
It's out May 16th.
May 16th. So definitely check it out. Josh, what song should we wrap up tonight's episode with?
When does this air?
It can air as soon or as late as you like.
If it can we wait until April 4th?
Sure.
Then I'd like to, we'll play Nick at Night off the new record.
And oh, actually, I wanted to ask about that song. Why Nick at Night? What's the background behind Nick at Night? The TV block that everyone from a certain age remembers quite fondly.
Well, you know, I kind of wrote that song about someone named Nick. And, I don't know, man, it all kind of fell into place. That's the one that Bob's on. And we have a video coming out for it that Evan Wolf from Vacation has done. He's done three of our videos before, and it's like, it's super cool. Like the TVs all have like we're playing, but there are like all these TVs around, and the TVs have like different things going on, like clips of Nick at Night, like Mork and Mindy and I Love Lucy, and like, you know, it's like this thing playing, and it started as one idea, as things often do. It starts as one idea and then kind of like morphs into something else and becomes like what it is. And so, you know, it's about one thing, but the whole package, like when you see the video and the artwork for it, and yeah, it's just a very cool song. I think it's one of the better songs on the record. It's unique. It's not like one of those kind of like straightforward, you know, four chord, like songs that we're very kind of used to doing. This is a little more thought through.
Well, Josh, thanks for the great interview. We're going to have you on again sometime soon or soonish. We got to talk about more Dopamines. We got to talk about Dwarves. We got to talk about Tandoori Nights, which of course is King Khan, and Bloodshot Bill. That's via Josh's record label, Rad Girlfriend. Also, The Kilograms, which is kind of buzzing right now, which is very exciting. So, Josh, thanks for coming on. Let's play Nick at Night off the brand new Reggie Nathan's record out May 16. Room for One More. And we will see you next week. I know how you feel, like it's part of the deal, like it comes with the territory.